This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our generous sponsors, BetterHelp and RCAT.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Jack Sadler, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Great to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you back, Jack. Jack is the CEO and co-founder of Part 3. He's been here before, episode 517. It was called The Intelligent Construction Administration Platform for Architects. So if you want to go back to that episode, learn more about Part 3, learn more about Jack, his origin story, it's all there, episode 517. Jack's mission through Part 3 is not just ambitious, but transformative, aiming to empower architects and engineers to manage construction projects with unparalleled speed, automation, and intelligence. His journey in the tech and construction industries have been marked by strategic leadership roles and the successful launch of multiple tech ventures. Now with Part 3, Jack is tackling the critical challenge of connecting construction teams more efficiently than ever before. For those who've joined us for his first episode back in 517, you'll remember Jack's insightful perspectives on leveraging technology to streamline the cumbersome process of this often hampering construction projects, right? This cumbersome process that we have. Today, he's here to share some latest advancements at Part 3, share a little bit about how the platform evolved, but most specifically, we're going to talk about AI, right? Because Part 3 is using AI. It's using lots of different technologies. I've actually been doing it for a long time, a lot longer than the hype that we've been hearing in the last few years. And whether you're a long-term listener or not, you'll recognize Jack is a testament to what's possible when technology and vision converge to solve real live problems in our construction industry. So I'm excited about this conversation, Jack. It's good to have you here.
It's really good to be here. That was an awesome introduction, by the way. I love it.
Thank you.
It's pretty hard to spend this long in tech and in architecture and not get drawn into AI. So yeah, really excited to go deep into that.
Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation because, you know, the last couple of years, AI has sort of found its way to architecture. Architects are notoriously late to the party with technology and innovation. And everybody knows that, right? We're usually about a decade behind the rest of the world. Things are speeding up, right? AI has been around for a long time, but architects have sort of started to embrace it over the last couple of years. But a lot of us have no idea what to do with it, right? It's a lot of fun. It's cool to go onto Midjourney and type in some words and get these cool images to come back, or go to ChatGPT and ask it to help you sort of put together an email to a potential partner. Those are all great practical tools, but I'd love to sort of go a little bit deeper than that. Like, how can we really use this technology for the work that we do as architects?
Yeah, I think you hit on a few really, really cool points as well. Most of what we're talking about in AI is a little bit theoretical, right? Most of it is really either deep into the model and trying to understand how these large language model works, and then inevitably start critiquing all the problems we're going to see with LLMs, which are real problems. We're going to have to overcome some really scary facts, and it's going to require some regulation. It's going to require a lot of data governance, which we can maybe get into that. But it's so exciting. Like, we're pretty used to seeing all these fancy images and videos and things that can create on the visual side. And that's obvious. We know how that's going to impact us today. We can create these compelling visuals that's going to help our conversation with clients. We're also going to be prepared for our clients to rock up with what they think is a really well done visual render with a plan behind it that's totally not constructible, but to the plain eye, it looks pretty good. So we're going to have a ton of impacts, not only to how we run our projects, but to the profession itself and to how we run architecture firms as a business. It's going to have some really big knock-on effects. So I think what I'm trying to do, at least, is really try and ground this in AI is no longer theoretical. And we don't have to talk about large language models. We can talk about what is being used today, what impacts Part 3 and AI and all these other technologies out there could have on your business today. And then within 3-5 years, it's going to change the profession and it's going to change how you run your business. So I think those are all really important concepts to wrap our heads around at the moment.
I want to go deep into the future and sort of imagine what our profession can look like if AI moves in the right direction. We all can sort of imagine what could happen, right, if it goes into the wrong direction. But I want to talk a little bit more specifically today, right? What are some of the tools that are being developed today, like Part 3 and other AI tools, that we as architects could and should be leveraging today?
Yeah, I mean, so much of what architecture is beyond the initial design stage. And most of what we're looking at AI is design. You've mentioned a couple right off the top, but we're going to see a lot of impacts. There's some fantastic startups like Maquette.ai that are really going deeper into actually creating renders, creating plans, and allowing you to edit them directly on a screen. And that's going to have a huge impact. But some of these tools are a little bit more like low-hanging fruit. I think most of what architecture is, most of what construction is at the moment, is very, very documentation heavy. 90% of construction is documents and 10% data. I think what we're going to start to see is a big shift in that, because the single biggest impact that AI is going to have is giving you access to unstructured data in structured ways. So all of these messy pieces that don't look like data today, like these photos from site, these, you know, reports from project managers, these anecdotal chats and conversations you have, all of that can start to become structured data. And that can be fed into models that can create progress reports, and they can check and they can scan for safety problems. They can scan for, you know, upcoming problems that you might face. Those things exist today. And most companies out there, Part 3 included, we're building solutions that are helping these workflows move more efficiently. Like right now, one thing that we've done with Part 3 is we've figured out how to interpret a specifications document. This massive 2,000, sometimes 3,000, 5,000 page document. You can use AI. We can scan that document. We can pull out all these messy visuals, these messy long sentences, and we can turn them out. We can say, here's the 250 submittals you should expect to receive on this project. And by the way, the second you get one from your contractor, we're actually going to review it for you first. So we'll do the first review using AI. You've got a bunch of hints, prompts, and tricks, which is going to help your junior staff get caught up to speed. It's going to help you save time, create more accurate reports, and do them faster. And it's going to help your GC do a better job. They know what submittals they need to send you. They know they're going to send you complete packages. So you're not going to waste time going back and forth. So there's tons of applications that exist at the project level today. That's here. That's already being used. And I honestly think for firms that are not using it right now, they should have a plan to be applying this within the next sort of 6 to 12 months. Find ways to bring in at a minimum things like location intelligence and visual scanning using AI on site, find ways to improve your workflows, to use all of these digital tools, to find ways to bring them in and to kind of speed up a lot of the processes you're doing. Because what we're next going to see is the impact of the business model. The business model of an architecture firm is going to start to shift. And the first step we can take is make sure our projects are running more efficiently so that we can be a part of that change when it comes.
I love what you just described, right? Because when we think about AI and in architecture, what's going to happen, we immediately go to the design, right? We immediately say, okay, those images are going to evolve and they're going to become more real and it's going to help us with our drawings and those things. But I love what you just described of using AI to take that specification, all those drawings, right? Let's say a commercial building has 100 drawings, 200 drawings, and a giant specification document. And that's a practical way that AI can be used today, that it goes through those drawings, it goes through that specification and says, here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to focus on both the construction side and the architect side, making us do our job better, helping us do our job better. It's essentially a technological assistant, right? You could also hire somebody to read that document and take notes and say, here's what you need to know from this document. Here are the submittals that you're going to need to review. Here are the issues that you need to focus on in the drawings. But AI can do that much more efficiently, likely more accurately. And so I love that practical use of AI. But you also said that by embracing the tools and technology that we have today, it's going to change the business model, right? And that's the thing that people get nervous about, right? Because architects don't like change. They've been doing it for this way for hundreds of years. And technology is going to change the way we do architecture. And architects must embrace it, or else architects are going to be replaced. And so what is your thought on that, Jack?
I mean, we're seeing it today in other industries, and architects aren't the only people who are married to a timesheet business with 100 years of history. You know, lawyers do it, accountants do it. We're all going to go through the change at the same time. I think it'll be interesting to see who does it first and where it becomes more widely accepted. But we're seeing it. Like, a great example that I've been using is graphic design. Graphic design is obviously an area that was massively up for disruption. The second ChatGPT hit and we saw DALL-E 2 and we saw Midjourney, the first thing we were thinking is, great, we don't need graphic designers anymore because we can just type in a handful of words and generate new imagery. So what do these design agencies do? Well, a couple of the ones that we work with, notably Supersight, like something that they did was they immediately released an offering to say, well, if you want slightly more budget conscious design project, you can do one which is human plus AI. You'll get faster results. We'll basically augment what the AI does, but we'll let the AI have the first pass and we'll use it as part of the project. So I benefit as a client because I get the same product faster and for cheaper, and they benefit because I went to them. I didn't try and sort of play around with AI myself. I still used the agency. So we're seeing that this has a business model impact. And when we think about an architecture firm, I think the problem we've got right now is that even though the business model is entrenched in all this history and all this legacy, you know, we're used to it, it's not really how we productize what we offer. If you think about what an architect delivers, is it an hour of time, or is it plans and specs, or is it a building? Whichever it is, that's how we should be monetizing the business. That's how we should be moving forward. Like, spoiler alert, it's not an hour. You're not generating hours. You're generating plans and specs at a minimum. But I think really what we should be doing is making sure we reflect the product and the end state of what the client is paying for. Because it's not our building, it's the client's building. So I think what we're going to see immediately is architects figure out how to productize the end goal, the specs, the plans, and then slowly move forward beyond that. Because if you're delivering these plans and specs for a 50% reduction in hours, you're not going to make as much money. And even if you kind of, you can say like, well, that back office efficiency won't change how we bill. We're just going to be the best architecture firm out there. That's not really going to last either, because other architecture firms will catch up and then clients will become savvy to it. And your clients will start saying, well, actually, I don't want to pay for all this. I don't want to pay for the research time, the back and forth. We're seeing this on the law industry in legal, where most firms are starting to push back on research hours because we're saying, well, you can use AI for this research. It doesn't take you 20 hours anymore. It takes you two. We're going to see the same thing in architecture. There's going to be resistance to pay for some of this activity that we currently bill for. So if we stick to billing for an hour of time, we're going to lose out. If we shift and we bill for plans and specs or have finished building, you're going to generate the same revenue and you're going to differentiate on the competitive nature that you use these tools to get there faster.
I think also one piece that we have to focus on as architects, and we have been doing this for generations, is the human-to-human connection. That's something that AI can't replace.
Right.
I believe that no matter how technologically advanced we get, people are still going to want to work with other people. Yes, the calculations and the money change and the business models change, but ultimately people want to work with people. And yes, we may not be able to charge as much for the work that we do today, but like you're saying, Jack, that if we shift what the deliverable is, the value that people get by working with you as an architect over working directly with AI is going to be the difference, right? How can we as humans be different than technology and leverage all of that technology to be able to provide a better experience for our clients?
Yeah, 100%. You know, because there is no amount of AI tools that could help someone like me design a building. I still need an architect. Because if nothing else, I need an architect to sit down with me and say, is this really what you want? Have you thought about this? You know, there's these other considerations around you that you need to embrace. And I'm never going to be able to do that, no matter what tools you give me. But what it might do is force me to kind of go a little bit further without hiring the architect, push it as far as I can on my own, and then go to an architect hoping to save some cash. So that kind of change is kind of already here. We're going to see that. Most clients are a little bit more architecturally and construction savvy than I am. So they will try and take things 60, 70, 80% of the way. And then an architect needs to come in and justify that getting that last 20% needs this mix of human, AI, technology, design, consulting to kind of get you over the line. And I think it's going to happen faster than we're expecting. If you look at the pace that we've seen this technology come, it's only been a year. You and I last spoke a year ago and AI was still a little bit new and ChatGPT was still this, you know, OpenAI's overnight success story, 15-year overnight success story. But now adoption is the game. Adoption is the main task for every firm.
For sure. For sure. What are the things that architects today, right? Here we are talking about what the future looks like. There are tools today. What are the steps that a small firm architect, because we're talking to thousands of small firm architect business owners right now, what are some of the things that they should be focused on like today? Like they should, when they're finished listening to this, they should go do this or these steps. What are the things that we need to focus on right now?
That's a good question. There's definitely a couple of angles I would take. One is tooling. I would be looking at every aspect of my business. And for the record, I'm also doing this. I'm not an architect, but we are using AI internally in every department. It was the first thing we did. We've got software developers, we've got writers, creatives, we've got folks in sales and marketing, write a lot of messaging content. Every single person is and should be using AI. So the first thing I'm doing is looking at the back office operations. And then if nothing else, the metric is how can I generate more revenue per employee? How can we make sure we're doing things more efficiently per person? That doesn't have to immediately impact your business model and how you bill and how you chase work, but it's setting you up so that in the future, you're at least prepared for the reduction in hours or the expectation of reduction in hours to generate some of these artifacts. The second piece that I think follows that is making sure your data, as unstructured as it is in a format that can be used in the future. So all these photos, client meeting minutes, all these types of like long form text and report updates, make sure they're stored somewhere that you can readily access. Right now, you might not be able to drop those into ChatGPT, but the products that are coming out are basically building on top of those large language models to interpret that unstructured data. So they're going to interpret your meeting minutes, your field reports, your observations, and any milestones and financial data you have on a project. And they're going to turn that into really, really usable metrics that help you understand your business, help you justify your value to the client. All of that can be done today. So look at those tools, figure out how you can bring something internal, look at the way you're saving and storing and using data and make sure that's there and it's ready. On the flip side, I would start pushing the boundary for, can you tweak your billing models? Can you go after projects that's less about hours spent during a phase? And can you price yourself or speak to clients you've got longer term relationships in and understand a little bit more about how you can surface and generate value through deliverables? You know, completing a phase is one way to unlock revenue. but delivering something that's really strategically objective to the project is the better way to do it. And I would definitely start having those conversations now, because that is going to change. The single biggest impact to your business will be the shift in client expectations and the change in competitive landscape. And that change in competitive landscape shouldn't be underestimated. Today, an architecture firm that's, you know, maybe a, let's say a small to mid-sized architecture firm of 20 employees, if they want to start structural engineering or adding interior design or any new division and discipline to the business, it's quite a difficult process to do. You know, 5 years ago, you'd have to go out and hire 10 professional engineers and stand up a structural engineering practice. But in the future, that might be as simple as getting one new partner in and then using AI tools underneath and generalists to actually run that practice. So now you can start to shift your own business into new competitive areas, but everyone around you will do the same thing. Your clients may start to add architectural services. Your contractor may start to shift and become more of a design build firm. So you're going to start to see who you consider a competitor massively increase. You know, everyone's going to blend a little bit, get a little closer. So you've got to start making sure you're aware of how you market yourself, how you position yourself, and how you describe the value of what you do. Most architecture firms do kind of fall in the same pattern there and sort of position themselves on human values and, you know, the design process, a little bit less so on bringing buildings to life and what makes your view and your industry experience and relevance, you know, more competitive than another firm. So as the competitive landscape shifts, I'd make sure we're starting to very deliberately position ourselves ahead of that.
Yeah. And that gets into branding and storytelling, right? And
so much.
So when our clients think architect, what does an architect do? We've been talking about that for decades. And we've been talking about storytelling. Learn to be able to tell your own story. Thousands and hundreds of thousands of architects telling their own individual stories can literally shift the profession. I love the advice, Jack, of experimenting, right? Taking some of the tools that we have, knowing that our clients are going to become, if they haven't already, coming to us with expectations of AI being part of our process. We need to be prepared for those client expectations and say, yeah, we do that. No problem. Here's how we do it. Right. And provide them with a service that charges them to do something in a specific way. You don't have to overhaul your entire business tomorrow. Just take one little piece of it and experiment with it and create a product or a service that leverages AI so you can start experimenting with it and see, oh, that works. Let's try this. Let's grow this. Make this a little bit bigger. The other thing, Jack, data collection. Everything that we do needs to be done in a specific way in order for us to be able to leverage that in the future. Can you dive a little bit deeper into that, what that means in terms of how we should be doing that today?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to predict what the end state is going to be, right? And what that data will need to look like. I think the main message I'm trying to sort of push is to understand that unstructured data can be structured. That's kind of the whole point of AI, right? Like today, the difficulty of construction being 90% documents and 10% data means you can't really interpret a lot out of those documents because you've basically got a stack of PDFs. Some of those PDFs are drawings and plans. Some of those PDFs are shop drawings and things from the contractor. Some of those PDFs are addendums and change orders and all these financial things, but are basically all PDF and you can't do a lot with that. Fast forward 10 minutes into the future here, and we are going to see tools that can take and accept all of those different PDFs. Like Part 3 is proving, you know, we can take really big, messy, ugly PDFs, and we can do a job as good as any human at interpreting and generating real facts. So I think for now, my only advice is to not underestimate the value in all of that unstructured data. Those meeting minutes have an awful lot of context. And if you combine the meeting minutes with who said what and in the progress of construction, the action items, with the change cost, with the financial project and the milestone, and some visual aspects, that's a progress construction report right there that an AI could generate for you much faster than any human. And they're not going to spend 3 days pulled into the other meetings and gone to the other site. An AI can do 2 projects at the same time or 200 projects at the same time. So it's going to be really important just to make sure you're accessing it and storing it in a way that's really useful. You don't need to overthink it. You just need to make sure you've got it all in a place. You can start to dump it into a model as soon as those products become available. And they are coming. Part 3 is one, but there's tons out there that are starting to interpret all these different PDFs.
Yeah. And you don't even need to organize it. Just make sure it's somewhere where you can access it, right? Because AI can search it. You don't need to structure it in any way. But another piece of what architects do is often pen to paper, right? And that's something that I've recently discovered in my own workflow, that I have hundreds of scraps of paper. You know, if, even through this podcast right now, my notes are all a pen on a piece of paper, which can't be interpreted by AI, right? So all of my notes either need to be scanned or I lose it, right? And so that's something I've actually just recently decided that I'm going to change. I'm going to wait until March. This is being recorded in February 2024. March, the new iPads are supposed to be coming out. I'm going to buy a new iPad and all my notes are going to be on an iPad, even handwritten.
You ditch the pen?
They'll still be handwritten, but they're going to be written on a device that then can convert my handwriting into text and then can be stored, right? We need to think about that. We need to shift our mindset. Hand sketches. Architects are constantly sketching on a piece of paper. Again, same thing. Can't use it if it's on a piece of paper. You're going to have to scan it or you lose it. But if you're sketching on an iPad, now that is a digital, you know, representation of your sketch, which can then be used and interpreted using AI. So I think what you're saying, Jack, is that we just need to think about what we're doing and how we're doing it, thinking about this technology and not only what we can do with it today, but what we're going to be able to use in the future.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, everyone's going to struggle with that transition, right? From pen to digital. I did a few years back trying to figure out how to type during meetings and things and trying to do all this. And drawing on a screen is never as easy as drawing on a bit of paper. But this computer vision technology has existed for a while as well. You know, like you can take a photo with a piece of paper with your iPhone and it's going to recognize the text and it's going to let you highlight it, copy it. That's computer vision in its most basic form. And we've seen the most recent OpenAI products. If you haven't already, the OpenAI Sora, I think it is. Like it's turning text and stuff into video and animation. So the computer vision is now part of these large language models across the board. So yeah, take photos, save them, store them. You don't have to shift. I personally couldn't go back to using a pen. I had to write some birthday invites for my son the other day. And it was the first time I'd picked up and held a pen for more than 30 seconds in years.
Yeah, it's hard. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Architects, listen up. Is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human who lives in this world and is going through a hard time, therapy can give you the tools to approach your life in a very different way. I know this community of small firm architects very well, and I see many of you struggling. That's why I reached out to this episode's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a platform that makes finding a therapist easier because it's online, it's remote. And by filling out just a few questions, BetterHelp can match you with a professional therapist in as little as a few days. It's easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist. There's a link in the show notes. It's betterhelp.com/architect. Just use that link, betterhelp.com/architect. Clicking that link helps support this podcast, but it also gets you 10% off your first month of BetterHelp. So you can connect with a therapist and see if it helps you. If you need someone to talk to, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the show notes or visit betterhelp.com/architect. That's betterhelp.com/architect. Thank you to BetterHelp for supporting this podcast and for supporting our community of small firm architects. For over 30 years, ARCAT has been providing AEC professionals with high quality and up-to-date building product information. Today, ARCAT.com is much more than a product catalog, with BIM, CAD, and specifications created in collaboration with manufacturers. Beyond that, ARCAT.com also offers lead data, continuing education resources, newsletters featuring the latest projects and products, and don't forget, detailed podcasts. ARCAT.com is truly the one-stop shop for everything architecture. Try it out. Go to ARCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. I've experimented with typing my notes, but with a conversation like this we're having right now, I have to be able to very quickly continue this conversation and write the note of what I'm going to, so I don't forget later in this conversation to bring back something that you referenced. And so I can't be typing that, right? Plus, I don't want you to hear me typing. So I have to write it. But if I'm writing it on a tablet, now that's digital.
Yeah.
Rather than paper.
It's like you said, right? That's step one. That's a good step.
Exactly. And it's just a mindset shift, right? It's just a mindset shift. You also talked about our tools and which tools can we be leveraging AI. And as you were saying that, I'm going to look at my notes here and it says inventory of your tools on my piece of paper here. And so I like the idea of evaluating our entire workflow as architects. Every tool we use, whether it's a pen and paper or a software, is there a tool that can automate that or leverage AI in some way and go through your entire workflow, right? And put an inventory of tools and which tools can we shift in order to maximize the benefits of this technology.
And that is going to be, I think, challenging shift. In the short term, so it's 12 months, firms are going to start to become aware of these technologies, become aware of new products and tools. But making that shift isn't going to be easy because I think most people right now look for ways to do what they're doing better. You know, you're kind of looking for that 10, 25% improvement on a workflow. As AI becomes more and more relevant, that's not really going to be the best way of doing this. It's going to be, like you said, it's sort of going back to the drawing board of what do we need to deliver and what are the best ways of delivering that. And you might end up completely reinventing a couple of workflows and designing them around some of the tools that are going to move the needle for you the most. And I think that is quite a difficult shift for most. You know, like you don't bring a tool in to work the way you've been working. You need to bring a tool in because you see an opportunity to totally change what you've been doing. So redesigning those workflows is going to be, I think that's going to be a moment where we stall in this adoption curve. That'll be a moment we start to get a little bit worried about it. Like, okay, this tool looks great, but it's totally changing the way we do things today. I'm not sure we're ready for that. That's a change management process. It's changing 5, 10, 20 people in what they do on a daily basis. So I do think that's going to be a hard moment, but that's just going to come from trial and error. Most of these tools are not going to force you to do big bang changes. You know, with part three, we always make sure it's really clear that the best way of figuring out if you love part three is to just use it on your next project. And if you love it, you'll use it on the one after that too. If you don't, no hard feelings. But it's going to give you the chance to test it in one, you know, concentrated space, one little area to get some good feedback and then go from there. And that might be a good way to test out some of these new tools. It's going to be the Wild West, right? For the next 6 to 12 months, those tools are going to change, reinvent themselves, redesign themselves, because they're using AI as well.
What's exciting for me is to imagine what the new firms that are being established today, right? These young architects coming out of architecture school, having been immersed in technology since they've been born, all working on iPads and iPhones since they've been born, they are going to build that firm that we're talking about, right? Yeah. From scratch. They're not going to do it the old way and have to convert it. They're going to build the new model. And like you said, we should be looking at our competitors. That's a competitor, right? That new model, that new architect that's coming in is going to be a direct competitor with architects like me who've been in the profession for decades, that if we're not starting to make some of those changes and shift, yes, we have an advantage with our experience and our age and our knowledge, but the new firms doing things differently are going to be a new way of doing things. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited that those firms are going to impact the profession in a really positive way. What are your thoughts on that, Jack?
Yeah, I got two distinct areas we want to dive into there. One is around that knowledge gap, because that's what it is, right? It's a knowledge gap. You've got all these veterans in the industry and people who have experience pre-AI, which is basically everyone who's an architect today. And you've got folks who are coming up and graduating using these tools. And that shift is going to get bigger. So we're going to see a bigger generational gap than we've ever seen over the next 5, 10 years. But that is massively important to embrace, because the folks that are coming out from industry now, you know, we talked a little bit about how your competitive landscape shifting. That doesn't just impact the work you go for and the clients you sell to. It also impacts your ability to attract talent. And if you're finding it difficult to attract talent today and you're not using technology, you're going to find it impossible to attract talent in 2 years, 3, 4 years. So part of this adoption is going to be for talent and retention. And we need to make sure we're deliberately finding ways to bridge this gap. So kids that are graduating using these tools understand what the tool's actually trying to do. And they understand the logic behind it. They can challenge it. They can think with it. And that's a really important step. But we also need to make sure the folks who are in senior positions now, the associates, principals, and partners of today, they actually know how to come down and meet them halfway and use the tools and understand where it is good and not good, where we can rely on it, but where we need to supplement it with a second check or with a bit of human intuition. I think that generational gap is going to grow. And there's going to be a lot of shifts in university programs and in the architectural education space to embrace a lot of it. And we are seeing that today. But the second point on this is if we as an industry are considered resistant to change, these are the types of catalysts that will exclude us from the conversation. I heard a really, really great couple of stories recently, but one is obviously I'm big in the venture capital world and spend a lot of time speaking with investors and folks who have got really big, interesting plans in the construction space. And I heard a story through KP Reddy, actually, who's been on this podcast. And he spoke about one of the biggest VCs in the world, Andreessen Howards. And they had this idea where they wanted to kind of spin up a solution that would reinvent structural engineering. So some of the construction tech VCs that I know of and sort of connected with Andreessen Howards said, like, well, if you need help, we can introduce you to some structural engineers and we can help your company go out there and sell to them. Andreessen Howards' response was, oh no, sorry, you've misunderstood. We're actually not going to go out and sell to structural engineers because there's too much resistance. It's too difficult to do it. So we're actually going to build our own structural engineering firm of the future. And they're going to put something like $50 million behind it. It's going to be a great experiment. But it's a great example of, well, now those structural engineers are just not a part of the conversation. They're not going to have the chance to give feedback, to be heard, to improve it, to add to it. They're just being excluded. And that is happening in other industries. In the legal side, there's a company called Carter who basically built a solution that would help companies manage, you know, ownership, equity in the business. And their obvious target was to go and start providing the solution to law firms. All the law firms said, no, no, thank you. We actually do these cap tables in Excel for our clients and we make a lot of money off of it. So why would we change? Because that is, you know, tens of billable hours per client for us. So we're going to keep doing that. So Carter went out and they started selling to all of the folks that sort of don't like lawyers, like me, like startups. And they sold Carter to startups directly. So by the time we're working with lawyers, well, we go to them and say, we use Carter and we need you to use it. So lawyers were excluded from the conversation. They still became users and had to adopt Carter, but they lost all influence and all of the ability to sway where that direction was going. So that's the risk. It's a very real risk. But if we as an industry are resistant to this change, we're just going to get excluded from the conversation. It's going to happen without us.
Yep. That is a theme that we've talked about here before, that if we don't embrace it, we lose it, right? That if we don't become the leaders of it, someone else will. Let's move to what the future looks like if we do embrace it. Let's say the profession recognizes that they're hearing us talk, having this conversation. They're like, yes, let's do this. I'm ready to roll, right? So we all do this. We all do our inventory of tools. We start learning about AI. We start leveraging it. And our firms start to change and become more efficient. We all start making more money because we're doing this. The new firms come in. Let's say 5 years from now, I'm not going to even push it a decade. 5 years from now, best case scenario, what does a modern architecture firm that's running full blast, fully efficient, look like to you?
It's a good one. And 5 years is fun because we're going to see a lot of adoption, a lot of innovation. The resistance is going to die down. So 5 years is a good horizon. But one thing that's not going to happen within 5 years is regulation and governance. So we're probably going to still see a lot of headaches. We're probably still going to see a lot of issues coming out of how and where AI is being used. And we're seeing that in other industries, right? Like the lawyer that cited an incorrect fabricated case and the trader who committed insider trading when an AI lied to it. So we're going to see a lot of these issues and that, you know, we're probably not going to want to risk our own license and risk our seal on something that AIs do. But I think the thing we will see is within the next 12 months, 18 months, we are going to see new business offerings. And that is going to be the most exciting phase for this industry. Because for the first time, we're going to see business model innovation in architecture. We're going to see firms try and create or try and convince clients they've been working with to do different contract types. And that's going to give them the freedom to do AI supplemented offerings and to bring in a different way of working. And I think that if you pair AI with some of the other industry innovations that we're seeing, like modular design and development and buildings like that, like I think this is going to make construction way, way faster, way more efficient. But I think the next sort of 3 to 5 years, I think it's going to be a much more competitive landscape. I think the biggest impact we will see is just new firms entering the architectural services offering from the GC world, from the interior design world, clients directly. And we're going to see architects do the same thing and move into new spaces, take on new offerings, move earlier in the value stream, stay later to help sort of organize what happens when you hand over a building to a client and things like that. So the consulting side becomes really the value prop and the offering. It's all about helping guide them through these phases and these objectives. So it's going to be super fun to see. Yeah.
I don't want to leave this episode with everybody listening to this and freaking out, right? And being worried and being pessimistic about our profession that we're doomed, right? Because we're not.
We're definitely not.
Right? And what we're talking about, we're sharing the solutions to this, right? And so I don't want you to be overwhelmed by hearing Jack and me having this conversation. I want you to be inspired by it. I want you to recognize that these changes are happening, whether we like it or not, and that there are steps and solutions that we can embrace to move ourselves in the right direction, not only individually as architects, but as an entire profession. And it only takes us to do this in small increments, right? Just commit that you're going to make these changes. Do your evaluation of your tools. Look at the way you're collecting your data. Start thinking about the experience that you provide to your clients, because that's going to be the thing that differentiates you, right? Use these tools and then enhance the experience, the deliverable of what you're offering, and just do this in small steps, right? So commit today to do something today, and then tomorrow, look at the way you're doing it and maybe shift your mind again. And so I want to just give you some very practical steps to move forward in the direction that we are talking about here. Before we wrap up, Jack, do you have any thoughts about the future and what architects should be doing today to move to that next step as well?
Yeah, I mean, today, the best use of AI is to replace the things you don't like doing. And that's what I'm doing. There's tons of my job that I absolutely dislike, and AI is starting to do all these things for me. I hate doing calls and sending out meeting notes afterwards, so I adopted an AI tool that does that for me. I hate running and writing progress reports, so I adopted a tool that does that for me. So I think in the short term, architects have got tons of tasks that you'd rather not do. No one wants to review a 150-page PDF on a door hardware submittal and compare that to your specifications document. So let the AI do it. I think that's the best use case and the best first step. It's just to look for these tools that replace all the tedious parts of your job that you don't enjoy doing anyway. And that's just going to bring you not only time and freedom, but it's going to bring a lot of joy back into doing what you do and focus on design and consulting.
Well, I'm going to skip the final question because you just answered it. Unless you have a different answer for the one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow, I think you just answered it. But if you have additional thoughts on that, what's your thought?
I think that is definitely the best one. We've also talked about saving, storing, filing all your unstructured data. And we talked about starting to have those conversations with clients. Start to have the conversation on alternative ways to price. What if you could save 50% of your time in the CD phase? Would it still be just as valuable to you? If so, then we pay for CDs, not for the hours that went into it. So I think just starting to have those conversations now and consider it research. You're just researching for what business model was going to look like for you in 2025.
His name is Jack Sadler. You can learn more about Part 3 at part3.io. Jack, what's the best way that an architect can learn about Part 3 other than going to the website? But is there a free trial, any of those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. Just go to the website, check it out. We've got a bunch of stuff on there. You can directly book a meeting with me or anyone in our team. We've also got an awful lot of content out there that's going to help you understand where and how you can use AI. And we've also got free tools out there that are great examples of tools you can actually start to apply today. For example, you've got a specifications document. You can dump it into our free tool on the website. We'll generate a submittal log for you and your contractor. So there's a lot of free artifacts out there that we can generate and provide for you. But head to the website. It's definitely the best place to start. Or shoot me an email. I'm jack@part3.io. And I always love to talk about this stuff too.
All right. jack@part3.io. The website, part3.io. Jack, I always am inspired when I talk to you. I love your knowledge. I love your passion. always an exciting conversation, always makes me think about where we're going in the future, but also sort of grounding me in where I am today. So I appreciate you for the work that you're doing at Part 3. And thanks for coming by here and sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Already looking forward to the next one.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, two a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember three words: love, learn, share. Have a great day. Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.